If a player cleans his ball during play of a hole, except on the putting green, he shall incur a penalty of one stroke. That's the rule, Jerry.
But it's just a friendly game. Why do you always have to be such a stickler?
Because that's the way I was raised.
Welcome to Spirit of the Game, brought to you by the Colorado Golf Association. Here are your hosts, Ed Mate and Lewis Harry.
All right, welcome to another edition of Spirit of the Game. You're ready to turn the page. The grass is green. The flowers are, what is it, April showers make May flowers? Is that the saying, I think? Something along those lines. But welcome back to another edition of Spirit of the Game, our spirited Rules of Golf chat. This is Ed Mate with Lewis Harry, and how you doing?
Good.
Doing good?
Season's here.
All right. You were just saying before we went live, you wish you were two of you because you got a lot to do and not enough time to do it.
We wish when it's November and December, you think it's so far away and you have all the time in the world, and all of a sudden you blink and it's May 1st.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So the topic today is a single subject, and that subject is divots and fairways and the pervasive belief among many golfers that you should be given relief when your ball comes to rest in a divot, in a fairway. So as you're listening, ask yourself this question. Would you, if you were king or queen, poobah, would you grant free relief when a ball comes to rest in a divot in the fairway? So just ponder that for a minute, and we'll see if this conversation persuades you. And we'd love to hear from you. If it does persuade you, we'd love to hear from you. And if it doesn't, that's even better because that's the way we all learn. What prompted this is I had a fun opportunity last week to speak at the Colorado Seniors Golf Association annual luncheon. And the topic was, if I were king, what rules would I change? And I went through my list, which we've covered on this podcast. And I said, there are two things I would not change. And I can't even remember what the second one was. But the first was, no way ever would I allow a player to get free relief from a divot in the fairway. And I paused and said, how many people here, by show of hands, would give a player, after making that statement, how many people here would give relief? There was maybe 100 people in the room, and it was an A. There were 90% of the hands, at least it appeared to me, that went up. And I was taken aback. I mean, I really know that that's a very commonly held belief. Famously held by people like Jack Nicklaus, who's on the record of saying he thinks this change should be made. When the USGA rewrote the rules in 2019, the number one by far complaint or suggestion in the comment period was free relief from divots and fairways. So we know that's no surprise, but it was a visually striking thing. I was not prepared to see every hand go up. So I'm going to pause there for a minute. I can tell you, and this is where I think what I wanted to do today is just let this marinate a little bit and try to pull back. Why is that so commonly held? What is driving that? And I always feel like I'm holier than thou when I get in these conversations, and you start down the line and play the ball as it lies, of course, as you find it, et cetera. So first of all, does that surprise you that so many hands went up? And before you get to what your personal view of it is, which I know we're in 100% agreement, any just initial thoughts on that part?
No, it's not a surprise to me that many hands went up. I think that's I wouldn't say a universal feeling amongst people that that's the way they should think it should be, or that's what they think the rule should be. But no surprise to me there. However, I will say, and God, I hope I don't come across as a total prick here. some people might already think that. But sorry if you do.
I don't know if Aaron needs to edit out that word. I think it's okay. This is a PG-13. Go ahead. No,
there's nothing bad.
And those who know you know that is the case. So why not let everybody know that?
Well, I think this belief of relief from divots is a very American belief. I think if you go globally around the world, especially over to Scotland, England, Ireland, I think you're going to find it the other way. I think there's going to be a strikingly low amount of hands that think that should be the case. And maybe I could be wrong, but just speaking as an American, I do believe it's a very American belief in the way the game is played here in America. I also think that, again, this is where I hope people don't get the wrong impression of me. I also think that there's a vast majority of people who view their ball landing as in a divot as this great slight or wrong that's been done to them by the golf course, mm-hmm. or by their other golfers on the golf course that have left behind this divot. Mm-hmm. And because they view it as this great wrong that's been done to them, something needs to be done. They need to be avenged by this great wrong that has been done to them by their ball landing here. So, you know, the easy targets to avenge this great wrong that has been done to their ball landing in this divot is to pick on the rules.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's just initial thoughts. That's where my head.
Well, in reaction to those initial thoughts, a couple things I've been in conversations that I've had with friends and just talking about this and why they think, because again, we're all human and we know there's this notion of fairness that is driving this. It probably doesn't help that we call the area the fairway, which reinforces this fair. I'm in the fairway. It should be fair. This is why is there unfairness in the fairway? How often does a golfer practice hitting shots out of divots? They practice bunker shots. You know you're going to hit it in bad places. Why don't you practice harder? That was one, I thought, interesting comment. So, when we get to the end, I think, just to kind of tease this, this is not a new topic. This has been around a long, long time. Mm-hmm. The quote I will read really, I think, highlights that. Okay, so now, next piece of this. The other thing I was going to say in reaction to what you said, and that's, you know, this injustice. You know, when somebody cuts you off on the highway, you get mad at them, right?
Right.
They didn't follow the rules, particularly if they crossed a double yellow or a solid white. You're mad at them for not following the rules. So you're right. I think that's also part of it. It's not just this is unfair, but somebody else caused this divot and they didn't do their job. No. So therefore, you know, make it right for me. That's another piece of this that I hadn't really considered. Sand-filled divots versus non-sand-filled divots. Do you feel that there's any, let's just say if somebody said, I understand that, you know, I just think I should not have to play out of a bunker in the middle of the fairway. And now with the common practice of putting sand and seed mix in, you can end up in the middle of effectively a fairway bunker. Does that persuade you that maybe down this very slippery slope, we should attempt to draw a line and say, okay, no relief except in sand-filled divots, then you get relief. And if I'm listening to this, say, why would that be a problem? I get it on the play the ball as it lies, but why would that be a problem?
Well, you know, if anyone familiar with the rules, you know there's always an exception in the rules. You know, you read the rules and they're, you know, well, it's this way, and then except when this, and this happens, or except in these scenarios. I think when we start adding exceptions like, you know, well, only when it's filled with sand or only when it's repaired this way, I'm not sure those type of exceptions are really in alignment with the way we want to go.
Well, it is the slippery slope. So I'm kind of dancing around this. Let's just tear apart. Let's just shine the light on how uneducated these American golfers are. And I agree with you, by the way. There's a lot of evidence of this. Mm-hmm. In the Joint Rules Committee conversations over the years, it's very clear there's a difference. They play faster. There's a difference in philosophy and culture. There's no doubt. And Americans are more coddled. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you don't find a red-blooded American who likes to play the ball as it lies, or vice versa. A British player who complains every time things don't go their way. But in general, I think maybe it speaks to the birthplace and just how closer connected golfers are in Scotland and Ireland to the roots of the game that drives this. But
I think a part of it too is the manner in which they play golf over there. It's all the culture over there is very club centric.
Mm-hmm.
It's all based around a club and the competitions you play at your club,
mm-hmm.
right? in at least in my experience in America, the culture of golf is you and four buddies are going out and playing on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And there's maybe a game, maybe not. Maybe you're just playing your own ball. Who knows? But I think the culture of it being so centered around your club and the competitions you play at the club and the players you're playing against in that club, I think just lends itself better to the rules that are established along with that.
So. Right, right. All right, so let's just highlight the ignorance and stupidity of any golfer who thinks you should get relief for a divot in the fairway. Number one, when is it a divot? When is it not a divot? First of all, play the balls that lies in the courses you find it. That's golf. It's the most fundamental tenet in the game. That is what makes this game great. Overcoming adversity, taking the good with the bad, that's the game of golf. And if you allow a player to get relief from what's seen to be a unfair lie because they hit it in the fairway, that's the end of golf. You just tee it up at that point. Just play lift, clean, and place. And that's fine. Just admit you don't want to play the game. You want to play a different game. And believe me, there's many beginning golfers who should do that. When I play with beginning golfers, I'm like, please improve your lie. Put it on a tee. I don't care. But we're talking about the rules of golf. And if we allow players, this is the end of golf. And one of the first comments I made to the group the other day when I was talking about this, I said, as a rules official, I would always breathe a little sigh of relief when a ball came to rest in the fairway, knowing that I'm not going to be called in for a ruling. The ball's in the fairway. My job here is done. They hit a wild shot, and it's in the trees. There might be a TIO. There might be some obstruction I have to deal with. Okay, I better get my game face on. Ball's in the fairway. I'm safe. No longer. Now we have to determine whether that ball's in a divot. I now have to go in there and tease apart and deconstruct every lie. Is this a divot? I don't know. It looks like there's some sand there. What about this one? Well, it looks like somebody kind of put it back, but I can't really tell. Bottom line is, if a player doesn't like the lie, they're going to claim it was a divot. And as rules officials, we're going to be chasing our tails, and 6-hour rounds are going to become 10-hour rounds.
Yeah, I think fewer reasons to bring a referee into a situation is good. And I'm not saying that because I'm lazy and I want to do less work out there while I'm a referee.
No, we get excited. It's something to do. It's fun.
Right.
Most of the time, you know, that's the beauty of golf is you hit the ball, you hit it again. You don't need us.
Right.
Why are we going to have to intervene every single time?
Well, I know you're a fan of the, in the rules of golf, if anyone's ever read through the book, each rule has a purpose statement. And I know you're a big fan of the purpose statements.
Thanks
in each
for
of the
reminding
rules.
Me. Yes.
And they're, not that it necessarily, it does relate to what we're talking about here, but the rule doesn't. I'm talking about rule 11, which refers to a ball in motion. What happens when a ball in motion is either accidentally or deliberately hits something or is deflected, whatever the case might be. But there's a section in the purpose statement of rule 11. And I think it just sums up this entire conversation really well. Again, this is, keep in mind, this is talking about a ball in motion, what happens to a ball in motion, but talks about when this happens accidentally, there's no penalty, and the player must normally accept the results, whether favorable or not, and the ball must be played from where it comes to rest.
Yeah.
I think that just basically sums up the game of golf.
Yeah.
So
some of the other finer points of a parliamentarian debate to ask a player who takes this position is, let me ask you a question. If your ball hits a tree, ricochets into the fairway, you hit a terrible shot, but it got a good bounce. Do you still get relief from that divot? When you hit the ball in the rough, hit a terrible shot, it gets a good lie and an open shot and no tree trouble, do you move it behind a tree? Do you step on it because you hit a bad shot? No, you get the good breaks. You get bad breaks. And I'm a big believer that they all even out over the course of a lifetime, or they don't. Guess what? Life isn't fair. Golf isn't fair. Get over it.
The person on the highway Pucker is still going to cut you off.
That's right. Play golf. So again, I'm just, the thing that just amazes me is, and I don't know why it does, you know, why people just don't see that as logical. And I had one person come up to me afterward after making basically those comments I just made and said, okay, you persuaded me. I changed my vote. I would not allow, another thing that's sort of analogous to this a little bit, and interestingly, the shoe was on the other foot relative to Americans and Brits. stones and bunkers. For many, many years, the USGA and the RNA would get together. They still do. And they would debate and discuss. And when things were could not be agreed upon, they were put into the category of model local rule. So the embedded ball rule, as an example, in the U.S. was always activated through the green. It was not closely mown areas only. Again, in the spirit of what you were talking about in Great Britain and Ireland, they're like, no, we're not going to allow you relief. Only in closely mown areas are we going to do that. Saying, look, you're going to play the ball as it lies. Ironically, or sort of paradoxically, stones and bunkers, the Brits treated as immovable obstructions before we did. And the conversation was, well, when do you know it's a rock? When is it a stone? And it was a stone. Right. When is a grain of sand cease to be a grain and become a stone? And there was all this rigmarole. And finally, the USGA said, okay, we'll adopt this and make it universal. And guess what? It was a nothing burger. It was not an issue. Mm-hmm. And again, this talk about differences, bunkers in Scotland and Ireland are very rugged, much different. And I think that was the reason why they, you know, it was very clear to them. And frankly, for the same reason, they're not an issue here because we just don't have them. And when you do, move them. Yeah. So.
The other thing I was going to bring up that seems to be a common argument the other way, for the four argument, is that a player teeing off in the morning, let's just say this is tee times 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., one big long wave of players playing the golf course throughout the day. Well, the player at 8 a.m. is going to play a golf course with less divots on it than the player teeing off at 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. How is that fair?
Right.
And
well, not to mention weather conditions. You want to talk about fair or unfair. Would you tee off in the bright, brisk, perfect weather, no wind, perfect, pristine golf course? We saw that at the Masters.
Sure. You look at a typical Colorado summer day. The morning could be great. Thunderstorms move in by the early afternoon,
Yep.
Someone, I think, gave a rebuttal to that argument that I heard a long time ago. And I forget who it was. I wish I could remember. But they talked about the player who goes out and shoots a 76 on a Monday morning in perfect conditions, and then a player who goes out on a Friday afternoon and shoots a 76 in less than perfect conditions. And you put those two players together, and at the end of the day, they both shot 76.
Yeah.
The score is the same. So with all those different conditions and all that time between them and how the golf course changes over that amount of time, what was the difference between those two players shooting 76?
Yeah.
I'm not sure there is one.
Yeah.
So
kind of never thought of that, but in terms of, I follow gymnastics fairly closely and with an Olympic year, and it does frustrate me, diving, gymnastics, figure skating, where you have this subjective judge. And really there should be like a difficulty, like this golfer played a difficulty factor of 4 versus a difficulty factor of 1. So we're going to adjust their score according to the difficulty of the condition.
Could make the argument that the PCC engine is
the
playing conditions calculation sort of acts like that as a way now.
Right. Well, just to show the point I made earlier that this conversation is not new, I'm going to read a couple quotes from the very famous book written by Charles Blair MacDonald, published in 1928, Scotland's Gift Golf. And there was two things I flagged that kind of apply to this conversation. The first is kind of a universal, remember this is written in 1928, so over about 100 years ago. And he said, this is in the introduction, you must first realize that every time you add a rule to golf, you make the entire code more intricate. For instance, if you played a game of golf according to the 13 rules originally adopted by St. Andrews in 1754, there would be few interpretations needed. On the other hand, during the 3 years after the 1908 code was adopted, the Rules of Golf Committee made 309 decisions, and it has been making decisions ever since. Which reminds me of one of your favorite quotes, which I'll let you share when it comes to the rules of golf in general in terms of fairness. You tell them that, because this next one is a little bit more specific to the divot situation.
About with the rules being you could either have fair or you could have simple, but you can't have both.
Right.
You think about it, it's what did a golf course look like in 1754 versus what does a golf course look like today?
Yeah.
There weren't cart paths in 1754. There weren't sprinkler irrigation control boxes
right.
in 1754. There weren't, well, there might have been bridges, but maybe not as many bridges on a golf course. There weren't greens that rolled at 12, 13, 14s back in 1754. We didn't have, four different cuts of mohite on fairway to collar to first cut, second cut, you know. So again, as the game evolves and the course becomes more evolved and there's more factors on the golf course, you get further away from simple.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to simple versus fair, if it's simple, it's very black and white. Well, it might be one way this way and one way that way, and this way is getting screwed and this mm-hmm. way is not getting screwed. Or you could have fair where it applies equal to both ways, but you have to write it a little more complicated. It's mm-hmm. not as black and white as it might appear on the surface.
Well, and this topic today is a perfect example. It's very simple. You do not get relief. When you hit your ball in the game of golf, you play the balls it lies. That's the rule. And there's no exception for balls. There are exceptions on the putting green, right? You lift, clean it. And in the early 1900s, they finally changed that. Because before 1920 something, about the time this book was being written, that's about when the ball when the rules changed to allow a ball to be lifted and cleaned and replaced on the putting green. So the putting green, talk about slippery slope, my goodness, but needed. I mean, needed. Now on the putting green, it always cracked me up because there were 7 exceptions, and now there are even more to not touching your line of putt. And they said the line of putt, this was prior to 2019, shall not be touched except. And it listed 7 things. And I've always chuckled at that thinking, okay, if you have a rule and then you allow 7 exceptions, do you really have a rule anymore?
Oh, well, we have a rule that has 7 exceptions today still.
Really?
9.5 with a ball moved by an opponent.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no penalty for the ball accidentally being moved by the opponent and marking it accidentally on the putting green.
Yeah.
Or by
are you going to lame all 7 of these?
There's those 2 that specifically apply to the opponent,
mm-hmm.
but then the 5 that apply to the player as well in 9.4 mm-hmm. also apply in that rule.
Okay,
so you do have 7 exceptions,
right?
In 9.5.
Well, now just staying with the putting green, you're now allowed to tap down spike marks, repair any additional damage. So this idea that you shall not, frankly, I think we've changed it. You are allowed to touch your line of putt. So don't start
as long as you remove the touching before the stroke's made.
Right. So now it's much better. We just admitted can touch your line of putt. And it's a good change. I'm not suggesting it was bad, because now when a player does their aim point, goes midway through the putt to just kind of align, get a feel for it, what it's going to do halfway through the break.
We don't have enough time to talk today about aim point.
No, we don't. We don't. We're going to wrap this pretty quickly, because I think this quote from C.B. McDonald says it best, and this, again, is 1928. This is toward the end of the book under Rambling Thoughts, and he says, quote, "So many people preach equity in golf. Nothing is so foreign to the truth. Does any human being receive what he receives as equity in his life? He has got to take the bitter with the sweet, and as he forges through all of the intricacies and inequalities which life presents, he proves his mettle. In golf, the cardinal rules are arbitrary and not founded on eternal justice. Equity has nothing to do with the game of golf itself. If founded on eternal justice, the game would be deadly dull to watch or play. The essence of the game is inequality, as it is in humanity. The conditions which are meted out to the players, such as inequality of the ground, cannot be governed by a green committee with the flying divots of the players or their footprints in the bunkers." So that's 1928. C.B. McDonald, one of the grandfather of golf in this country. And that's pretty much And there's something very satisfying to me anyway, that as much as things change, they remain the same. As much as we modernize the game, as much as we improve equipment, as much as the upkeep of golf courses has improved and in many ways made it more enjoyable, ultimately, man, when you see Wyndham Clark's ball shoehorn out of the hole that would have sent him into a playoff, oh, does that hurt. And that's what brings us back. And that's what makes it joyous and interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think the all the things that happen on a golf course, whether good, bad, indifferent, you know, wherever the chips fall or wherever the breaks send you, yeah, I think it's all, you know, deep down, whether you're on one side of this argument or not, I think deep down it's all part of why we play the game.
That's right. Okay, well, we're going to wrap this one early. Send us your comments. Did we convince you? Are you now a believer that no relief should be granted for divots and fairways? Or do you remain steadfast in your belief? And if so, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear an argument. I've yet to hear I've never heard a convincing argument, not even the beginning of one. So I'm still waiting. And I'm trying to keep an open mind. So convince us why that would be a good thing.
And can't wait.
Yeah, that'll be our next rules time.
All right.
All right. That's a wrap. Thanks, Lewis.
Yep.